The next era of Bucks basketball is here.
Lillard, three-pointer for the lead. It's Dame time.
Giannis just inside the three-point line, working on Orlando Robinson. Spins around him, and goodness gracious.
This is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks.
Tonight, we'll unpack it all with a guy who's been in the middle of it all. The president of the Bucks, Peter Fagan. And our special guest tonight, who's traveling with the team, is Bucks general manager, John Horst. By far the best record in the league. And Chris Middleton is a huge part of that thrill ride.
The source for the inside scoop on every dribble, drawn up play, and decision made. Now, here's your host, Gale Klappa.
Hello, everyone. I'm Gale Klappa, and this is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks. Something's happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. That line from an old rock and roll song sums up the week that was for the Bucks and the NBA. For starters, Giannis and Dame made history in a physical, tension-filled game against the Pacers. But then it got weird, as tempers flared over who took the game ball. That episode, though, may have added a little bit of jet fuel to the Bucks locker room. Over the weekend, they motored past the Pistons and put away a Houston Rockets team that's young and improved. Add it all up, the Bucks have won 19 of their first 26 games this season. Tonight, we sit down with one of Milwaukee's favorite sons. After an all-star career, his number 8 hangs in the rafters at Fiserv Forum. Off the court, he's been an actor, a playwright, and today he's a color analyst on Bucks TV. Marcus Johnson, always good to be with you. Welcome back to Courtside.
Well, thank you, Gail. Great being here. Thank you so much.
Well, Marcus, we'll dig right in. You've been around the game a long time. Have you ever seen anything like what happened last Wednesday after the Bucks beat the Pacers and then the search began for who took the game ball? Walk us through your take on all that.
Well, that was just one exciting finish to a well-played game by the Bucks. And so from my perspective, Gail, I mean, you have to maintain, you know, context of the entire game. So it started with Giannis giving Tyrese Halliburton, talented young player, talented budding young superstar out of Oshkosh, Wisconsin, led his high school team, Oshkosh North, to a state championship. So, you know, really, really good, Iowa State. But so Giannis gives him a forearm shiver, and he falls to the ground in a heap. I think it was a bit of a flop, but the Pacer fans have given me a hard time for calling it as such. But anyway, so Giannis gets, I believe, a flagrant for that. So it starts with that. Bobby Portis on a follow-through move, I think pretty much breaks the nose of Isaiah Jackson shortly thereafter. Aaron Nesmith, late in the game, maybe fourth quarter or so, tackles Giannis like he's wrestling an alligator. I think I called it as such on the air. And so these are the kinds of things that were happening. Bobby Portis gets ejected shortly thereafter for some choice words that he had with either an official or a Pacer or a combination of both. And then when the game ends, I'm up doing the broadcast from my position with Lisa Byington, and we're about to throw it down to our great sideline reporter, Melanie Rick. She has Giannis on the floor. He has just scored 64 points, 20 field goals, all of which came within 5 feet or less. And then I noticed Chris Middleton, Gil, in a very heated, animated discussion at the end of the Pacer bench, to the left of center court where Giannis was about to do the interview. And I say on the air as we're about to throw it down, I tell our producer, I'm like, man, something is going on down there. Well, I think he's just talking to Halliburton. My producer responds, Dan Keener. And I was like, no, something's going on. And right at that moment, Giannis sprints over and joins the conversation between Middleton and Halliburton. And Giannis is really, you know, laying in the Halliburton. Lloyd Pierce, the assistant coach for the Patriots, comes over. And then Danny Carter, the great security guard for the Bucks, he's trying to hold Giannis back, and Giannis just breaks free, Gil, and he just barrels down the tunnel. And I think I made mention of the fact that the coaches needed to be alerted to what was going on. They weren't out there. I found out later they were doing what they always do after the game, to go back to the coaches' lounge and kind of, you know, congratulate themselves, cool down, talk about the win and relax. So I didn't see what happened, obviously, from where I was on the court, but from the video footage that I've seen and everything else, the Bucks team and some of the Pacer players and Pacer personnel got into a, you know, a shouting, shoving match. And so it was just crazy, man. But look, I'm not going to respond or comment on the merits of whether or not that game ball was important. I think it was. 64 points for Giannis, breaking into the top five, and 3-point field goals made for Dame Lillard. I think, and I understand there's three game balls, I guess, now. This is all after the fact. But Giannis wanted the ball that he had played with that game. And as a player, you know the game ball. And so the Pacers, Rick Carlisle says they wanted to give it to Oscar Tshiebwe, the rookie who had scored his first official point. He scored some points in the in-season tournament with finals, but those didn't count. And so, I felt a little leery about that explanation after the fact. I guess allegedly one of the Pacer people had some bruised ribs or something from being elbowed. So, you know, it was a fracas. It was a Donnybrook. It was a brouhaha. And one of the craziest endings I've ever seen, man.
Oh, yeah. I will say this, though. You are correct that it appears that the Pacers thought they actually had the game ball. So, but all in the rearview mirror, and I'm sure the league will have something to say at some point about all of this. But moving forward on Giannis, Marcus, you've seen him up close and personal for much of his career. The guy continues to grow as a player. How in the world would you describe his growth that we continue to see from the Greek Freak?
Well, and I would also add, Gil, as a player and as a person and as a leader of this basketball team, leader of this franchise, and that's been evidence in terms of how thoughtful he has been in his post-game interviews. He had the back and forth with Eric Name of The Athletic, I think, last year after the team was eliminated in the playoffs against Miami, about the definition of failure and as long as you learn from what you're going through and it's part of the process. I mean, so those kinds of insights from a guy like Giannis in terms of where he is now and where he came from is such a – it's been a long journey, and but you can see – the maturity, the family man just had his third child, he and his lady Mariah, recently. And all the things that he's been talking to me about the last 9 years I've been here, Gil, in terms of wanting a big family and wanting a lot of kids around him and wanting to be a leader and wanting to be one of the best players in the world. And when he said that, Gil, what's interesting is that, and I remarked to Dave Kane, who was sitting in for Lisa Byington a couple of nights ago against the Pistons, that, you know, when I saw him as a second-year player, 20 years old, averaging, coming off a 16.7 rebound per game season, I thought his ceiling might be around 20 points and 8-9 rebounds would be a really good year for him. He may sneak onto an all-star team or two before it was all said and done. But to see where he's come from, what he is doing now, two-time MVP, a finals MVP, one of the top two or three players between he and Embiid and Jokic in the entire world right now. And then his great leadership skills. You can question the motives behind the game ball and things of that nature, but he's a man with a lot of pride, a lot of passion, and he sets the tone for this entire franchise.
And Marcus, Sunday night, Giannis became the Bucks franchise all-time rebound leader, but Marcus, you are still number four.
Yeah, I saw that. I was kind of surprised. I'm surprised I hadn't been bumped down a little further. But again, that's an honor because it's an honor. But it means that, you know, I was a good player when I played here. I played here 7 years, and I still am in the top 5 to 10 in several of the franchise records. But all of which Giannis is going to own, with the exception of maybe the 3-point field goals made record. But I was conversing with my partner, Lisa Byington, last night during the game. You know, if Chris retires in 2 years and Giannis plays another 5, 6, 7, 8 years, who knows?
Amen. And we'll have more with our friend Marcus Johnson in a moment. This is Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ.
This is Bucks Weekly on WTMJ. Now back to more of Gale with Bucks legend and TV analyst Marcus Johnson.
Marcus, over the past few games, it sure looks like Damian Lillard, the Bucks' big offseason addition, is beginning to find his three-point rhythm. Your thoughts?
Yes, he is. And the thing about Damian Lillard is that he's a guy, Gale, that takes a lot of pride in being daytime. Damian Lillard, one of the best players in the league, a top 5 to 10 player in the league. 30 points a game last year, and just has this reputation, as we saw the first game of the year against the Philadelphia Sixers, when he, you know, had 39 points and pretty much single-handedly won the game for the Bucks. We've seen that, Gale, about 3 or 4 occasions already, but he really hasn't played offensively at the level that he is capable of, and he really understands that better than most. And we've had conversations where, you know, where I've tried to pump him up and say, "Man, it's coming. You're looking good." He's like, "Man, you ain't seen nothing yet. Just wait till I really get into a rhythm. Wait till I really get into a groove." And this was before the weekend, so this was like walking onto the court Saturday against the Pistons. Now all of a sudden, Gal, I'm watching, and his pull up jumper from the 3-point line and even in off of screens. That rhythm was back, and he was knocking down that shot. And I've seen it building for the last 4 or 5 games, but it just all kind of, you know, came to a head on Saturday night against the Pistons. I think he finished with 33 points and had that 3-point shot really working, coming off of ball screens, off the dribble, step back, side steps, you name it. He was knocking them down. And then he carried that over against the number 2 defensive team in the association, and a team that was throwing a lot of length at him at every turn. So you had a Jabari Smith Jr. at 6'11", you know, matched up against him a lot of the times. Dylan Brooks at 6'7", matched up against him a lot of the times. And he still found a way, Gale, to punch the ticket for 33 points in that game. So he's got that rhythm going. And so what happens in the Rocket game, Giannis gets double team, triple team, all the defensive resources that the Rockets could muster or thrown at Giannis, because they know that he's averaging about, you know, 40 points a game over the last few games or so. They don't want him to get off, get into a rhythm. And then Dame was able to take over along with Chris Middleton in the fourth quarter. I'd be remiss not mentioning him. But Dame's 39 points in that game was just classic Dame. And so, and I've said it all along, Gale, is that you really won't be able to define what this team really is until around the first of the year. Give these guys a couple of months, you know, about 25, 30 games of playing together. Plus Giannis's legs needed to get in better shape because of his knee surgery. And Dame didn't play basketball this summer. He worked out diligently like he always does, but he didn't play basketball because his destination in terms of his trade request was still up in the air. So he didn't want to take a chance to get hurt and you know, setting back that timetable at all. So he needed time also to kind of get his conditioning right, to get his legs right. He tried to dunk left-handed on somebody the other night, which I think it was blocked, but it showed you just how good he's feeling in terms of a 6'2 guard trying to get up and throw down a dunk on a 6'10, 7-foot guy. I think it was Shingun or somebody of the Rockets that got him. But he's really rounding into form, and that spells a lot of issues. All this team already is, what, 18-19-7? I mean, they're doing a tremendous job as they try and find themselves, and as they try and find this blend between Giannis and Dame. And once everything kind of falls into place, I mean, it's going to be really, really scary just how good they are going to be potentially.
And Marcus, interesting observation that you had about the size of the players guarding Dame, who is, as you said, 6'2". But Marcus, as you know, the Bucks have a new head coach, Adrian Griffin, patrolling the sideline, his first time at the helm of an NBA team. From what you've seen so far, tell us about Adrian's coaching philosophy and what you've seen about his leadership style.
Well, you know, his leadership style, he's a very intelligent, I'll call him a young man because he's a young man to me. But he has a doctorate degree, a PhD in, I think, organizational leadership that his former coach that he worked for, Nick Nurse, who also has his PhD in the same subject matter, but encouraged him to make the commitment to get, and he wanted to do it, Adrian, for his father. So that gives you an idea. He's got a son, AJ, who is a tremendous basketball player for the Atlanta Hawks. He's got a daughter who plays for UConn and has been there for whatever, 4 or 5 years. And, you know, she's doing a terrific job and had one of her best games recently. that our own Lisa Byington was able to broadcast against Louisville. So I say that to say it shows that, you know, in terms of developing players, you look at a guy, what he's done with his kids and see how good they've turned out, you know, whether it's hands-on development or him supervising and directing their development from afar, you know that he knows what he's doing. And so I say that to say I like his transparency. The fact that the Bucks were struggling after the first four games with this defense where Brook Lopez made the adjustment of playing at the level of the screen. A couple of players, I believe it was Giannis and Chris, that hasn't been specifically identified for as a fact, but I believe Giannis and Chris went to Adrian Griffin and said, look, we need to go back to playing drop defense, letting Brook play where he's most comfortable around the rim, protecting the paint. And Adrian Griffin said, okay, and went with that. And then Brook, the very next game against the Knicks, had like 8 blocks. And so, but then the point, though, Gail, is that Adrian Griffin, instead of trying to keep that under his vest, close to his vest, and not let anybody know that the players talked to him about that, he came out and said, the players made the suggestion, I went with it, and it was successful, so we'll stay with it. A lot of coaches' egos wouldn't allow them to make that admission. So that transparency, I was kind of questioning whether that was the right move to be that transparent, but looking back hindsight, that was the absolute right thing to do. So from that standpoint, very transparent. He's playing his young guys. He's playing Marjon Beauchamp a lot. He started Andre Jackson Jr. the other night. He played him 36, 37 minutes. Andre Jackson Jr., I believe, who won a national championship last year at UConn for Danny Hurley, I believe is going to be a crucial component. You know, and it's starting to play some Malik Beasley, who's having a career year with us, and it's been everything we had hoped for and exponentially more. But the fact that Adrian Griffin is giving these young guys minutes and a chance here early in the season, putting them in and trying to get them used to the pressure of close ball games is a good thing. So, look, we've got a really outstanding coaching staff from the new guys that Patrick Mutombo and Nate Mitchell and Coach Baker and the holdovers and Josh Oppenheimer and Ben Baker and Joe Prunty, who's been here before. We've got an elite level coaching staff. I talk to these guys all the time, Gil. Their insights, their unconventional approach to basketball and defense, I think is next level. And I think with the accumulation of all these great ideas, it's just going to take some time to get that synergy between the ideas and the talent and the mindset of the players and get everybody used to kind of playing a certain way. All these guys, coaches, come from different systems. You get Beasley and Dame in there. You get Giannis and Chris and Brooke with the Budenholzer kind of way of playing. You get Griffin doing his thing the way he did in Toronto. Now all this has got to mesh, and this is what's going to take some time. And in the process of taking time, we're still, you know, we're tied for what, second best record in the Eastern Conference, or second most wins, or whatever it is in the Eastern Conference, and keeping pace with the Boston Celtics, who, you know, everybody would admit it's just playing some of the greatest basketball out of the gate than anybody in the league. So all that just bodes well in terms, I think, to the direction of where this team is headed. And Adrian Griffin is a guy that just needs our patience as fans and supporters of the Milwaukee Bucks. And let's see what he does. I mean, right now, it's so far so good. To me, the main thing that you judge a guy by is what is his record right now. And going into like 26 games or so, I think we're 19-7 or whatever it is at this point. I mean, we could easily be, you know, if he was struggling, like, you know, whatever, you know, 13-13 or 14-12 or, you know, those would be evidence of a coach that's struggling. The fact that we're winning at the rate that we're winning, I think really, really bodes well, because this team and its ceiling is still incredibly high.
Marcus, you're absolutely right. Most coaches in the NBA would be envious of 19 wins at this point in the season. And we'll have more with Marcus Johnson right after this. It's Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ.
You're listening to Bucks Weekly on WTMJ. Here's more of Gale with Bucks legend and TV analyst Marcus Johnson.
Marcus, under Coach Bud, the Bucks mantra was defense. This year it seems like maybe the script has flipped. Shooters up and down the bench, and the defense seems to be quite a work in progress. Your thoughts?
Well, defense right now is still an area where the team is constantly evolving. It's getting better. And the one thing, Gail, that I looked at a few days ago, so it may have changed since that point, but what were we doing in the clutch when the game was on the line, when it's 5 points or less, 5 minutes or less, and we were top five in both offensive rating and defensive rating, and we were number one in net rating. And that's when you kind of combine the two and you subtract one from the other and you get the net rating. And net rating always, the teams with the best net rating every year are the teams that go the furthest in the playoffs normally. Miami was kind of an anomaly last year, but they got hot late and started with the Milwaukee Bucks in the playoffs to reach the finals. But so our clutch performances have really been good. So what that tells me, and that was over about 17, I think, clutch games or so. And we had a great record of 13 or 14 clutch games. I forget what it was exactly. But our record was outstanding. I think the second most clutch wins in the league at that point. And that tells me that when they want to set their minds to it and when they get into this area of desperation and urgency, then all of a sudden they lock in and are able to get the stops that are needed to be gotten to win basketball games. And that's the bottom line. So, yes, the defense is a work in progress. You've got a bunch of different systems on the floor at the same time based on what was going on last year between the holdovers under Coach Bud, the new guys and their respective systems that they come from, the young players, Andre Jackson Jr. coming straight out of college. You got a brand new coaching staff that has a way that they want these guys to play. But the thing I like about this team, Gil, is the fact that they are playing a physical brand of basketball that's been encouraged from day one. And I'm not just talking about hard fouls and elbows and all that kind of stuff, drawing blood. I'm talking about the subtleties of the game in terms of if your man is going to set a screen, then you're going to fight him to that position where he sets the screen. And once he gets there and tries to set the screen, you're gonna bump him and push him out a little bit further than he wants to be, so you disrupt the timing of your opponent. A lot of the subtleties these guys have covered, and now it's just a question of the guys on the court executing everything they want done. But it's coming. It's coming, and I think we've struggled big time, Gil, maybe the first four or five games statistically. But since that point, I think the last 15 games, this team is 12-3, and their defensive rating is middle of the pack, about 13 to 14, where I think overall it's maybe 20-21. But that's indicative of how badly this team struggled initially. But it's getting better and better each and every basketball game, and I think it will continue to do so.
Well, Marcus, we get tested this week again. One of the surprise teams so far this season is the Orlando Magic. And the Magic, as you know, roll into town later this week. Tell us from your observations, what's driving the improvement in Orlando?
Well, they're playing really good basketball. They've got a young coach in Jamal Mosley who brought in his own style of play. They've got one of the young, outstanding players in the league, and Ben Caro, a young man out of the Seattle area that I've known about for a while just from my connections with the Seattle area. I worked for the Sonics back in the 90s and know a lot of people from that area. And so he's a guy that I think is going to really, really be a superstar in this league. They've got some other good young players on that basketball team. They've got the brothers on that team, Franz Wagner, who's really good, really, really terrific in terms of scoring the basketball. Mo Wagner, a big, strong player. Gary Harris, outstanding shooter. Jalen Suggs, a guy that shot UCLA out of the Final Four a few years back. I think Jonathan Isaac may be back into the fold. This young man, Anthony Black, has kind of come out of nowhere and really has contributed to their success. He's just 19 years old. So they've got good young talent. And they're a team that is starting to have some belief within themselves. I think they lost recently, maybe to Boston or somebody. But they're going to be a handful. They gave us everything we could want down in Orlando. And a lot of people may have been surprised at the outcome, but I wasn't, because it's a team that's playing with some early confidence right now. Now, the question is, with a young team, can you sustain it? How long can you sustain that? How long can the guys go and work through adversity when they start to accumulate a few losses? But for right now, I mean, they're a team that's believing in themselves, and Cole Anthony is a son of a friend of mine, Greg Anthony, great broadcaster. But Cole is one of the most athletic guards that they put him in a position, Gil, coming off the bench with that second unit now, where he can dominate the ball offensively and kind of be the leader offensively with that second unit. So those little adjustments, those little tweaks are important towards a team's success. But Paolo Banchero is the guy. He's the man. He could put up 39, 38 points, and rebound the ball terrifically. And for a big guy at his size, 6'10", about 240, 250, I mean, his ball handling skills, they kind of remind you of Giannis right now in terms of his strength and ability to get to the spot he wants to get to. So they're going to be a handful, but it's a good challenge, and it'll kind of wind up, a really successful six-game homestand, and that begins first, though, with the San Antonio Spurs. We can't overlook them.
Man. So, Marcus, before we run out of time, got to ask the important question. So let's switch gears to the question of the hour. Now, you're famous for your birthday dunk, and February 8th is coming. It'll be birthday, I believe, number 68. Will we see yet another stylish dunk?
Well, man, look, I can't promise anything, Gail, but I had a hip replacement done July 25th. And so the surgeon that performed the operation, one of my best friends in the world from UCLA. I met him when I was 17. He was 19. He was 19 and had already graduated college and was working on his master's in biostatistics. And he went on to med school right after that and is one of the foremost orthopedic surgeons in the country who is one of the experts at this particular anterior hip replacement surgery that he performed on me. And I say all that to say, yeah, he told me, I asked him, I said, Don Sanders. I said, Don, what do you think, man? Will I be able to dunk on my birthday? He said, look, everything that you could do before this hip flared up a couple of months ago, you'll be able to do after I get through with this surgery. I'm going to put a little bit of extra padding in there just to help. But then he showed me, he emailed me some of the mixed martial artists and some of the yoga instructors and ballerinas that he had done double hip replacements for. And Gil, they're jumping all over the place and doing splits and flying around. And it just really gave me encouragement that if I stuck to my rehab, which I've done diligently and even more so because I'm obsessive when it comes to stuff like that, that I'll be able to do one more dunk. And so this is what we're gearing up towards in February. I'm going to, it's funny you mentioned, I was thinking about this, working out this morning. I was in the gym at my apartment unit. I was in the gym at 5:55. Gym doesn't open until 6. I think I was slamming the weights around too much at 5:30. So they locked it up until 6. So I had to sit outside until 6 a.m. to get in. But I'm going to amp up and wrap it up in January, man, and see. And so it's a thing that the motivation behind it, Gail, is not to, bring a lot of attention to myself, but it just helps me to stay focused in terms of the older I get, my physical well-being, taking care of myself, working out 6 days a week. And then the duck is kind of a byproduct. If I do it, it's great. We have fun with it. My son and I, who started Josiah when I was 55, I think, or 53 years old, whatever it was. And if I continue to do so, that'll be great. If I don't, that's okay too. But at least I would have given it my best shot. And that's the thing that I think matters the most. It's just something, it's kind of that carrot dangling to keep me looking forward to all this hard work and seeing if it pays off.
Well, Marcus, I'll bet we see a monster dunk in February. Good luck to you, and always great to sit down with you. Your insights are terrific, as always. We really appreciate your time. And you've been listening to Courtside with the Milwaukee Bucks on WTMJ. Happy holidays, everyone.